This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Good morning. This is Talking Devils, your favourite Manchester United podcast. I'm your host, Wayne Barton, joined by Manchester United legend Paul Parker. Paul, how was your weekend?
Maybe it sounds like as good as your one, Wayne, really. The bonus for me, though, that I wasn't actually at Wembley this time around.
Oh, that bad. Dave, how was yours? Had a good weekend?
I had a great weekend. I was in Manchester on Friday and Saturday, and then I was in Ireland to watch us go through to an FA Cup final on Sunday. One of the better weekends that I've had all year.
Oh, Dave Murphy with the low bar there. Tell you everything you need to know about your food this Monday morning. So Coventry 3, Manchester United 3, United win on penalties in the FA Cup semi-final. A lot for us to talk about today. And, you know, Dave, we were talking before we came on air, and I'll let you go first because there's going to be a lot of negativity on these podcasts. I'm pretty sure about it. But you are a shining beacon of positivity, so hopefully you can rub some of that good mood off on the rest of the pod. So tell me the good news on Monday morning.
Well, the good news is on May 25th, we'll be walking out Wembley once again. In an FA Cup final. All the rest is just noise. You know, I know we'll get into the game. 3-0 up, 3-3, winning on penalties. Couldn't care less. Couldn't care how we got there. Couldn't care if it went in off someone's backside. Couldn't care if it was a controversial goal. Doesn't bother me at all. It's a cup competition. Things like this happen. I'm delighted this Monday morning. But Manchester United is a name that creates headlines. And a lot of journalists are feeding off those headlines over the weekend. But at the end of the day, on May 25th, Manchester United will be in another FA Cup final, the second in 2 years. And I don't know what the negativity is all about. Yeah, championship side, but nothing to lose.
Okay. Let me ask you this question then. You know, there's a bit of a saying before. It's not like one of the cliche sayings, but it is a saying nonetheless that, oh, well, there are worse ways to win a semi-final. And we talk about, you know, you'll talk about semi-final victories in the past. I'm thinking of you scoring in the semi-final against Oldham, last minute, equalised from a goal and win the replay. Ryan Giggs scoring against Oldham 3-3 and Mark Robbins in 1990. Brian Robson in 85 scores a belter of a goal in Jimmy Greenough in 69 scores a goal. Even though we didn't win the cup that season, I remember the semi-final replay because Jimmy Green against Liverpool were a great student. Giggs against Arsenal in 99, obviously. Like, they are great ways to win finals. But when they say there are worse ways to win a semi-final, that's got to be pretty much up there with, like, I'm really trying to drain on your positivity here, Dave. You're not having it. You're still feeling good about it.
No, there is no worse ways to win a game. And there's definitely no worse ways to get to a cup final. There really isn't. It's a cup final. It's a knockout competition. And Manchester United are in it. Who cares? Who cares about Coventry coming back, you know, from 3-0 down? Listen, I'm not stupid. I understand why some people are like, all doom and gloom, but it's Monday. We're in a cup final. If you're still gloomy about it on Monday morning, come on, get a different hobby. Because at the end of the day, we're in the cup final. Coventry are not. Liverpool are not. Arsenal are not. Manchester United is. That's all that matters.
Is Paul and I ready for our different hobbies? Rory says, good morning, boys. How are you doing, Rory? Rory. All right. Okay, Paul. So, 3-0 up to Championship side Coventry. Even Mark Robbins before the game is saying, he's going to talk down their chances, obviously, but he's going to say, things are not going so well for us lately. We've lost 3-4 or something, and come out and steamroll over poor Coventry. And then for most of the game, really, they've got Casemiro in defence. They are, we dominate the game. I don't think we play particularly well in that game. We get 3-0 up, and then they score a goal to make it 3-1, and it's pretty much the setting, because you have a feeling that if Coventry, with their reputation for coming back, United with their reputation for A, throwing away leads, and B, being so bloody lethargic, you know that it's a perfect hotel for Coventry to come back and pretty much. I feel sorry for Aaron Wan-Bissaka, because he's probably one of the ones who didn't deserve much of the blame today, and he got two massive slices of luck against him. But that's the way that football goes. One flies off him and goes into the net. I think Onana, his dramatic standing still didn't do him any favours. I mean, there's no dramatic about seeing anyone stand still, but he did nonetheless. And then we talk about the penalty at length in a different sort of section of the pod. But they get 3-3, then get to extra time, both of us hit the bar. Their chance is probably better than ours, it's the bar. And then we can also talk about the legitimacy of the offside law. I mean, the law is a law and he's offside. But, level is level in the old football parlance. And you sort of know, you understand that they've got everyone there. I'm not saying, by the way, that, I'm not contesting the law. It was definitely an offside goal by the letter of the law. I just think the law is an act. So Coventry have this incredible moment where they really deserved it. I think they played better in extra time and they deserved to win the game. And United, more than that, United didn't deserve to win, regardless of saying they were the better side or whatever like that. They didn't deserve to win because of the way that they threw away. They get away with it on penalties. Feel for the two country lads who miss. Onana, nowhere near any of them apart from one in about 20 penalties. That is what he's got near, and he saved it. It's a decent save. And United are through to the FA Cup final. So, Paul, I'm expecting that after all that, you're as full as day.
You're always going to be disappointed with United if they don't go and play like really in the way that they should do, especially up against a team from the Championship. You expect a team in the Championship, they've got nothing to lose. But you still expect Manchester United to beat them. You expect them having to work hard, but at some point, just grab hold of the game and show the difference in levels. I don't think they ever really took that on. And the 3-0, either I wasn't comfortable with the 3-0. I wasn't. And the moment that first one went in, my eyes rolled and I knew it would happen. The substitutions, we've seen it so many times. You take off players who are in areas which are, and they may not be controlling it, but they're stemming something. They're stemming the tide, quelling the tide, sorry. And Maynou coming off, I'm not really. It's happened too many times and it goes. Is it other players around suddenly go, oh, no, we're in trouble now. Maynou's coming off. What's going to happen? What are we going to do next? Can they not deal with it? Straight away, they're breaking at the heart of the defence. And then you look at it and Garnacho comes off as well. Anyway, I find that someone needs to explain this all to me. I find this very, very strange and I don't know why Rashford didn't come off. I'm having deja vu last weekend. I think I am, because I had a little bit of sympathy for Garnacho in the last game against Bournemouth. I thought that Marcus should have come off because he was just as bad, but he was terrible, and he was the one to come off without a shadow of a doubt, because he wasn't offering anything, not anything at all. But he didn't. He takes Garnacho off, and that frees up another player, because Garnacho this time was definitely better on what he was doing defensively. And it made a difference. You take off players which people see as a threat with and without the ball, or see them mentally as a threat, all of a sudden that person comes off, and all of a sudden it makes you feel better and you feel more confident what you can do next. And substitutions make such a difference, you know. And, you know, you take off one, you bring on Anthony. Does that get the other side thinking, oh, no, what's going to happen next? No, it doesn't. I think it weakens the team in that current climate. It weakened the team, the substitutions.
Yeah. I definitely agree with that. We've got some comments, loads of comments coming in here. I'll get to these as we go. First, I'll go with Johnny, who said, morning, gents. Love Dave's positivity. He isn't wrong. I'm not gloomy. It's a weird feeling. We won, but it felt like we lost. That's where I am this morning. I feel like there's so much negativity with it. Ben says, repeat of all the recent failings, isn't it? 3 goals given up in 19 minutes. Equaliser on 95. Over 50 minutes, 3 goals, 1 disallowed and 1 off the crossbar. The chaos can't go on. It's definitely chaos at the moment. Fox says the win was never in doubt. Paul's got the fireworks out in celebration of reaching a third final in 2 seasons. If you're listening back and wondering what the hell is going on the video, there's like, I don't know what it is. I'm not tech savvy enough to understand that. On the streams, people can click on something that either thumbs up people or presents a fireworks celebration, and Paul got one of those things comments. I think it means something good, but I'm not quite sure. Ben says, one thing for sure, that we'll be massive underdogs in the final. Hopefully get a couple of players back if we can win, if they get their act together. And Mike, who was there yesterday, hope you're doing well, Mike. Good to see you. He said, good morning, gents. In-game management is a constant issue. Is this on the manager, the players playing, a poor company, a support squad, or a combination of all three? Paul, you were talking about the subs there. I mean, the two that we're talking about really are Mainoo and Garnacho. I can't say that either of them played particularly well, but they've been the shining lights for months. Garnacho, possibly all season. They've been the two that you looked for, which is really shameful of a professional squad that they look to. A player who's only been in since January, really. Well, he's been playing since December, but he's been a fixture in the side since January. And then Garnacho really has only been a fixture in the side this season. You know, it was in and out throughout last season. So, you know, the manager takes them off and everything sort of goes to pot. But I mean, you know, he brings them off at 3-1, right? Well, one of them was brought off maybe at 3-0 and they were brought off at 3-1. There's 15 minutes left. It shouldn't be like that. So you shouldn't be now bemoaning the manager, right? Because I mean, I get what Mike's saying. We can definitely question some of the decisions for sure, but 15 minutes of an FA Cup semi-final left, you bring off two teenagers, or I don't know if Garnacho is now, but two lads who've been heavily reliant, but they weren't in the side this frequently last season when we were doing brilliantly for most of the season. So it's difficult to pin that one on the manager. The players, I mean, at some point, Paul, the players have got to take proper responsibility. And that just happened from the 70th minute yesterday was really, really appalling hour of football from those players.
What I will say is that we mostly were having this conversation, something similar, just after the start of the season, the middle of the season, the previous season. And we have to say, you cannot give these players, you can't give any of them, you can't trust any of them with responsibility. That is the big, big problem. As much as you keep saying it, and you keep wanting to count the number of games they've played, it's not because they maybe can't take it on board. I don't think they want to, because that means then that they might have to maybe mentally work harder and maybe have to go and help someone out and do their jobs. They want to play on their own, a lot of them. They really, really do want to play on their own. And I've been reading things, and a lot of people now are saying about the manager's got to go, and I get where all that's going now, because I keep looking at it. I'm shaking my head to myself. I'm trying my best, because I'm fed up of seeing it all the time, managers coming and going, and I hate giving content to some of these journalists so they can just say, I was right, look at me, and talk about the savvy they've got in football. But yeah. I think you've got to look at the players. There's only so much a manager can do. He's sitting at 3-1. He decides to make a substitution. I think Mainoo is the wrong choice given the position he's in, and that lad playing in that position. And it's a position of authority, and for a young lad to take that on board and do what he's done is absolutely fantastic. But to bring him off, if I'm playing with a young player and he's doing what he's doing, I'd feel a little bit that, should I be doing that? I'd feel a little bit put out because a young lad is doing stuff that maybe I should be doing, but I can't do, or I should be doing and I won't do it. But it doesn't seem to bother us because none of them seem to want to take it on board. And I keep reading and seeing things, and everybody wants to pat Bruno on the back because his work rate is doing this and doing that. I would turn around and say, fantastic what he's doing and the Bournemouth game. But I'd rather him be a leader in the fact of start pointing people out in a manner of a leader rather than in a manner of somebody who's concerned about his own game, who's concerned about himself rather than others. I don't want to see him chase all over the pitch. I want him to get people in the right areas and then start off and build from there. Him running around doesn't make him a great captain, because anyone can run around. Robbie Savage made a career of it. Does anyone talk about him being a great captain? They don't. So, so I'm just saying that bit has got to be quelled in a way, because it doesn't matter how badly I played in a team with Brian Robson or even with a Roy Keane in it, even with a Paul Ince, they never went chasing round just for the fact of, look at me, I'm working hard. They was more concerned about getting everyone to do their jobs and we do it collectively. So that's the one bit that worries me. I'm seeing in front of me now, people, this word, there's words that come out, game management. That's a big, big word within fan bases now. When you go in front, you've got to do this and got to do that. Football's unpredictable. That's what makes it great. If we all had this idea we could suddenly control games, we go 1-0 up, blimmin' hell, we'd get crowds of 5 because it'd be boring. You know, we all can do things, but football's meant to be there as entertainment, not to just contain and stop and make dull. That's the way it's supposed to be. But it's about that you do two separate jobs. You try and quell the storm, but you show something to go and score goals as well. And United haven't got that about them. They can't do both because they haven't got the players. The one thing that has to change is the players. New players needed, maybe with a new manager, but it's just the players. And it's as simple as that. It's shown that over the last couple of games, 3-4 games, the fact that they haven't won in so long, it's showing then. And I'm bored. And to be honest, I turned down working at Wembley before this game. I was there on Saturday, but I didn't want to work there. I get a phone call to work there yesterday morning. I was asked again. A radio company got let down by somebody, and I got asked, would I work? Could I come in? And I said no. I couldn't do it. Didn't want to put myself through it, and then all that hassle of getting home as well. Not like with people going back to Manchester or wherever, but I couldn't do it. Twice on the bounce, got to Wembley, and a second time watching Manchester United put me through agony. I just couldn't do it, and I'm glad I didn't.
Well, I did, and it was agony. I can tell you that. The point Rory's making there, Dave. But I know, like you. You know, foolish enough to sort of like say, yeah, the end result is that we're going to Wembley and everything like that. But come on, but like, let's be serious about what happened from that, like how our mark really from the moment that we went 3-0 up really, and it was a 3-0 score. I'm really flattered United, because I don't think we were 3-0 superior to them. You know, we were sort of coasting through that game. There was no hold on it. They were once playing the better patterns. They were playing better football than us throughout the game. And it was shameful, really, to let that go in that manner. We'll talk about, I will get to the offside decision, but just Coventry's comeback to allow a championship side. And I'm not talking about, like, this wasn't like the, I'm not discrediting again what Coventry have done, because obviously from their perspective, that may well be the second greatest day in the club's history. I don't, you know, second to their cup winning 87. It was a massive day for them. I'm not discounting, discrediting anything that they did. But for us, I don't think that they had to play well for that in that last 20 minutes. I don't think anyone had to play well against us to cause us the kind of trouble that they did. And we were, you know what I mean? It wasn't a superhuman effort. It was just a calamity of epic proportions that last 20 minutes.
Oh, it was, but... I'm still a little bit baffled why people are, you know, dismissing the fact that Coventry went into that game with absolutely nothing to lose. It's an FA Cup semi-final. As Paul said earlier on, anything can happen in a game. It's, you know, we were never nailed on to win that game. Out of all the semi-finalists, did we get the team that everyone wanted to get? I would say, yeah. But when you get to a semi-final at Wembley, you know, there's definitely more fire in the belly from the underdog, and that showed yesterday. I don't buy into all the negativity about it. To be honest, it's something that we've come to expect, and semi-finals are like that. You know, sometimes they can be very, very cagey and very boring, but in this case, you had a team that had literally nothing to lose, and I disagree. I think at 3-0 we were cruising. They may have played better football in their own half, but they didn't do a hell of a lot with it. And when it was the first time that we were actually pretty clinical with our finishing, you know, to be 3-0 up on 70 minutes, I thought, yeah, this looks like the right result at this time. You know, they always say 2-0 is the worst scoreline to have because you're a team nips one. With Manchester United, it doesn't really matter in the past couple of seasons, 3-0, 4-0. You just get that, and Paul said it earlier on, when they scored, it's kind of like, oh, God. You know, 5-6 years ago, you wouldn't have thought that way. It's still closed out. But I don't think we were as bad as people are making us out to be. It just, on paper, it just looks bad. It's just that 3-0 up, 3-all. I get it. I get why, you know, some people are jumping on that bandwagon. But the negativity, no. I do agree with Rory or with Mike earlier on. There's you know, there's three elements to this, you know, but, you know, the squad, the manager, and the players. But for me, the order is the players. Once that manager picks that team and they go out there, it's all on them. It really is. That said, the manager doesn't help them. I don't know what's happened with his in-game, you know, management, the substitutions. He just doesn't help them. I was more stunned that he took Mainoo off than I was of them getting 3 goals. I couldn't believe it. I'm like, why are you taking on the only player that can get up and down that pitch? And taking Garnacho off gave them a boost because he was the only one that was pushing them back. And defensively, he was doing well. I will never, ever understand how Marcus Rashford stays on the pitch for 80% of the games that he's played this season. I just don't get it. I really don't. It just baffles me beyond belief. And the only reason he went off yesterday was because he was injured. To have him still on that pitch right up to that moment was dumbfounding, considering he took the two players off that he did. So, and in a poor squad, you know, I know everyone has injuries, but we've had terrible luck. So Mike's right. It does fall into the three elements of that. But for me, it's players. It's the manager who doesn't help them. And this is why he's getting a lot of stick. And then, you know, we had 3 players injured the day before. I don't know what's going on at training, but this is just mind-blowing. It really is. We had 3 players injured, you know, the day before. It didn't help. We had to put Casemiro in as centre-back. My God, it was like he was running through treacle at some times. It was. I thought he started the game well, but then, you know, I knew that fitness would be the thing. You know, we would get him over time. And Coventry, you know, they were pretty nippy up front, you know. But I believe it's the players, you know, 70% is down to the players, 20% is down to the manager, and 10% is down to just, you know, injuries and a poor squad right now. Hopefully, by the time we get to the cup final, we'll have a couple of centre-backs back. You know, we'll have a few players back and we'll give it a go against City. But we are in an FA Cup final. Let's not dismiss that. The morning of the FA Cup final, no one's going to care about Coventry and the 3-3 game. Trust me.
We'll talk about it. I can tell you that. That's going to be a matter of conversation. It's not something that's going to leave these United players. We'll come on to the offside decision now. I just want to do a lot of mention when we get through. Liam with a nice praise. All the praise that we can get, we'll share. He's a big fan of the show. Keep it up. You're doing well. Mike and Rory talk about Dallow in there. Rory says all that's missing behind Paul is a Disney castle when he had the fireworks going, and that's true. It was there. They talk in the comments, talk about offloading the squad players, and I'm tell you, it's like a flipping Wikipedia entry of every Manchester United player to have played in the last two seasons. Box saying, we've got the issue of offloading and deciding what to do with fringe players. Heaton, Williams, Malacia, Hannibal, Van der Beek, Martial, Sancho, Greenwood. And Rory then goes, they could be easily 12 players who could leave this summer. Martial, Van der Beek, Sancho, Greenwood, Eriksen, Casemiro, Lindelof, Maguire, and Tomine. Anthony can't even fit all the names in. One comment, Rashford, Wan-Bissaka, Box says Varane. So, bloody hell. I mean, it's going to be no one left. Box said a 3-0, thinking a fourth, and then send on Amas, Wheatley, Jackson. Yeah, I thought that as well. But I think this first goal came a little bit too soon for that. I don't think that it was something that was out of the mind. I think that Amas has been in the squad with the idea to get him some minutes. And it just... because of the way that we've been capitulating and playing, there's just never that time to bring him on. I mean, like, we could say that at any point. There's never really been the time to bring Cobby into the team, but he's just come in and assumed that thing. John Silk, talking tennis, are we doing well, John? He says, football intelligence we've witnessed in game after game is off the charts stupid. Brentford away yesterday, Chelsea away, Fulham as well at home. Even Wolves away from winning the game in the 94th minute. We're vulnerable to counter attack. All right, that's enough comments for now. Keep them coming in. We'll get to as many as we can. Paul, the offside decision. He's offside. That's not in doubt. I mean, as brutal as it is, he's offside. The letter of the law says he's offside. The line's there. You can see he's offside. It was obvious from the replay you could see. I mean, Lee Dixon called it on the... when I watched the highlights back, he calls it, says, oh, he's offside. Oh, he's onside, and then on the second replay says he's offside. I think he could tell on the first off that he's off, but he's off by like the line of the pitch. He's level in body, really, the old school, like anything prior to 5 years ago, he's onside, and like he used to be even further than that. You'd have to be in front of the player, and there had to be daylight between you. And I know Wenger's talking about that, and I would agree with that. I don't see how he gains an advantage. But the law is the law, and he's offside. And that really, we'll talk about Ten Hag's future in a second, but I want to talk about the decision. What do you make of that?
Well, put it this way, I always look at it, sometimes you have to look at the players and you can judge it off the players, because within an instant you can tell it. And the reaction of the players was, well, maybe except for one player, is it's a goal. It's the reaction of the players, is that kind of just shoulders go and you're, oh, and that's what it was. It was in that way. It wasn't, oh, it's miles off. Because when it's like that, you accept it. You do, if someone's level, you accept it. But now the way they've made it, because they're trying to make football the perfect game where everything given is 100% right, which you're never, ever going to do with football because it doesn't stop and start enough like cricket or rugby. As you're saying now, by the letter of the law, and when it is a fraction of a toenail, then he's offside. I mean, if I was playing today, when I was playing, I was a size 6.5. In today's game, defensively, I would maybe cut my shoe size down, you know, on that side of it. You know, we're going to end up with centre forwards becoming clowns, aren't we, at this moment in time?
Well,
maybe
we
even having bigger noses. I don't know how it's going to work, but as you're saying, Wayne, you are right. The goal was given offside. Hard on Coventry. Seriously hard on Coventry. You haven't to go by that. But in the if they're not playing in normal football in the Championship, that's a goal. It's onside. It's as simple as that. There's no other way around it, you know, in that way. So they will feel hard done by, but it was just one of those games for them out of the blue. It was something they never expected, to be in a semi-final. And for the fact of being there, you know, it's made their season, even though, as I said prior to all this, a week or so, or 2 weeks ago, is that Coventry were a side really at least should have been in the playoffs. I think this FA Cup run has affected them and what's happened, because they should be in the playoffs. They are one of the better teams in that league. The way they play football, they're far and away ahead of a lot of those teams who are above them at this moment in time.
Buck says, I still maintain that Garnacho goal at the Emirates was onside. But that's exactly the same scenario. So, Mike says, I was in line with the incident and I called it straight away in real time before VAR or in the Championship. I dare say the system would give it. But VAR is the comfort blanket for them. I mean, Dave, I'm pretty sure I know how you're going to come down on this. You just said the law's gone with it. But I mean, God, that's. Offside's meant to be the spirit of the game. And I mean, you look at it, and I'm delighted we're in the final. I may not look it, I may not sound it, I am delighted that we're in the FA Cup final. But when you look at a sporting narrative, and you look at a team who's come back from 3-0 down, I know we had a chance in extra time, but they were the one who, they had that sort of flow that you knew that they were going to create the opening, the one opening the goal was going to come from. When we were attacking in the last 5 minutes, we never showed like we had that kind of conviction. They did. We had this moment, and like, it's devastating as a United fan. And we've suffered that two or three times this season, that kind of humiliation. And we deserved to suffer that. I mean, for the width of a toenail. But I mean, what do you make of that? I mean, it's cruel. I know you're going to say the low's the low. So come on, put me out of my misery. Tell me that.
I don't even know why we're discussing this. Whether he was an inch offside or 3 yards offside, he was offside. It's mind blowing that this has become a thing. Just you can't change the rule just because the team has come back.
I'm not saying to change the rule. I don't mean that. What I mean is,
but he was offside. Yeah, but that's the case. Why does it get highlighted? Because it's just Manchester United. How many other goals throughout the season have been offside and no one talks about it? It doesn't matter if it's an inch or 3 yards. He was offside. The rules say if you're offside, the goal can't stand. He was offside. It's ridiculous. It's because it's Manchester United. That if that happens in the Chelsea City game, we're talking today, and everyone's talking about it the whole weekend now, or well, from Sunday on, about that goal that robbed Coventry of a trip to a quarter. It didn't rob them of anything. It was offside. Yet Chelsea had a legitimate penalty, right?
Yeah.
And he didn't even give a corner. If he didn't think of it was a handball, why didn't he give a corner? Why are we not talking about that?
The VAR decision, I don't think that they can do that. If they go to check VAR, he can only overturn whether it's a penalty or not when it's a clear and obvious error. So he can't overturn. Yeah, they can't overturn.
About that?
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
That being a stupid rule rather than saying, oh, poor Coventry got robbed because they scored an offside goal.
I'm not saying they were robbed. I don't mean that. I just mean that in the flow of the game, they deserve to win it. I can understand the nature of being upset, and the in my understanding of what offside is, or my belief of what offside is, because I don't think he's gaining an advantage in that position. Like Paul said, it could be a shoe size, and that could well have been a shoe size. It's nothing to do with. I would change the law we've benefited from it like we did yesterday. We've also been punished from it in the past. I'm not coming out from a period of or a position of like, oh, I'm angry and like or I'm throwing all my toys out of the pram. I just think the law is rubbish and I feel like they've been robbed on something. Not the law is the law and the you know that's the way that the cookie crumbles. They've been dumped by that, really. I mean, and we've got
selling a little or a lot. Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Everyone's agreeing with you in the comments, Dave. So Mike says you're 100% correct. It's not an issue. It's not subjective. It's factual. It's offside.
Exactly. It is. It's not subjective. Shit. It's factual. He was offside. They scored. And we're in a cup final. And it's all doom and gloom. Oh, my God. We must be feeling terrible.
Okay.
Listen,
all right.
So on that last note, I mean, Paul has been out of the game for a number of years now, and he's already come up with the solution. Wear smaller boots. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Wear smaller boots. Shave your toes. Sure. Yeah, but I mean, we're talking about like marginal decisions for games. And in December, I said this on this podcast, probably. The disallowed goal for Bournemouth that would have made it 4-0 really saved Ten Hag's job. Because I don't think he survived a 4-0 home defeat to Bournemouth. I'm surprised he survived a 3-0 defeat, but 4-0 would have surely been untenable. And yesterday, a disallowed goal is most certainly, but for the short term, because I couldn't see a scenario where he gets out of that match with his job if Coventry win the game. And I still don't expect that to be the case because I would invest more time in him in on the basis of the decisions, the injuries have not gone his way, and that like building when all the players are there is the right message. But there is a fine line of where that balance goes away from you. And we were talking a year ago up to the cup final, the League Cup final, where all of his managerial decisions, all of his substitutions, all of the big calls like Axel Ronaldo, all of those main decisions he was getting right and deserved backing for. But he doesn't seem to have his finger on the pulse of things. And I understand protecting Garnacho and I understand protecting Cobby. Those are responsible decisions. But when they're so crucial to the result of a game, but you take off a teenage midfielder, completely disrupts the pattern of the game. But you have to be sure of winning the game, basically, and we're not. And that's on the squad, yes, but it's also the manager's responsibility to win the games and for his team to play good football. And now you look at it and you think, have you got any conviction in his leadership of the thing? And maybe that's a result of the player power. I'm not putting that all on the manager. Maybe this is a squad that swallowed him up again. But I can't look at the Bournemouth game, and the home game, by the way, because I think that was such a damning result. And then obviously all the results that have been damning in between. And yesterday, there's like big red letter warnings that there's something seriously wrong. Because those two results in isolation, I mean, we disregard Liverpool 7-0, but I'm talking Bournemouth, a heavy defeat to Bournemouth at home, and that kind of humiliation. Yes, it's the most embarrassing in United's history, or at least recent history, the way that came about. To come away from that, it feels wrong to celebrate it, even though we're in a cup final. And I know that those players will celebrate it, and they'll look at it as like, oh, it's a show of character. It needs to be the last lesson, and you know that it won't be. You know that we'll see more performances like that. And that, again, brings us back to the manager, Paul. I don't really know how Ten Hag... I'm not asking you for a solution yet. I'm not asking for you to name any names. I'm not asking for a way forward. I just mean this scenario. I can't see how Ten Hag goes into the next season as manager. I can't see it. And I think yesterday was a real final nail in the coffin for that.
Yeah, I know where you are, Wayne. I wish I could come out and say something which I 100% believed in for him to still be there. But I sometimes look at him, I look who's got on the bench. He's got a Steve McClaren next to him. Steve McClaren was there at a time when Sir Alex was playing young players. Steve, he shoehorned in prior to the 99. And he tried to claim it in front of Kiddo, but Kiddo had done most of the work, had been there. But he jumped in on the back of that. And there was young players coming through. But with young players, the boss still gave them responsibilities and they took it on. And it's the way they grew up so quickly to play for a club like Manchester United. So he has to, and I'm surprised at him, given that he was at Ajax and the young players that he had playing for him in that Champions League run, that he isn't saying, well, I'm going to do that. I'm going to test you. I need to know. And I don't think he's done that. I don't know Steve McClaren. What is he actually doing? Is he speaking to him? Are they communicating? Is he getting help on decisions he's making with his young players, using his experience about what Old Trafford's about everything about it, how the fans will be with a young player? They'll expect them to make mistakes, but they want to see you showing them, believing in them by playing them for 90 minutes in big games, intense situations, because protection can only go so far. Because you've got to remember, when you're 18, 19 years of age, people say you're very, very young. Within 3-4 years, all of a sudden you're hitting 22, 23, and then you've only got maybe a good 10 years left at top football. All of a sudden it's all over and done with. So how long do you go? What is the difference from being young? What happens? You're young, and then all of a sudden you're experienced, and you're finished. You've only got a short time. You've got to gain it somewhere. So you need to play the durations of games, big durations of big games, big situations. And that was a big, big situation. You can't afford to take off a player who's inspirational to maybe players who are on the pitch, take him off when they see him being needed after, you know, what they were just going through. They were going through a turbulent time when he came off, Maynou. Keep him on the park until such time you feel assured that the rest have dealt with the situation. So I look at it and I do wonder what they're going to do next. But the problem is now with football, and this is me just taking a pump, by the way, I keep hearing everyone coming out and saying, oh, but he's not an elite manager. We've gone from making football the easiest game to play, which anyone could play. Blow up a bag of crisp, tie a string around it, get air in it, throw it on the floor, kick around, just loads of newspapers. Something easy, the easiest sport to play in anywhere. To the point now where we've made it so difficult that the top clubs are struggling to find elite managers. Now, he's not an elite manager. No, he's a manager. Oh, but he's not elite. Well, how do you become elite? Well, you've got to do this and that. Only a minority get the opportunity to try and do that. So maybe the fact of, we look at Liverpool. I mean, the media haven't tried as hard to throw names at Liverpool as what they've done with United, by the way. Mm-hmm. But all of a sudden, everyone's mentioned about De Zerbi. He hasn't managed a big club yet. And you think, hold a minute. He hadn't managed. I mean, we had Graham Souness, we had Paul Merson saying about De Zerbi. Oh, he doesn't know the English game. Look what he'd done with Brighton when he first arrived. We could talk about many a manager. So maybe the fact of there's not that so-called elite manager out there, then maybe the reason why he's keeping his job at this moment in time. Who are they going to throw in? Because already they know they can't. Gareth Southgate is not in the equation. It's great that the media want to maybe give a departing England manager a job, and fair play for the press for doing that, looking after one of their own. But they do talk rubbish with United, really, because if he's supposed to be good enough to manage Manchester United, he should be good enough to manage Liverpool then, really. But they don't mention him with Liverpool. So I don't know. They're trying to Graham Potter. Graham Potter is supposed to have turned down Ajax. I don't know. But why Graham Potter? He's a man who went from a club where everything was organised for him. They had a melting pot and picked out players and they did it all together, to a club like Chelsea where they went and bought in the most expensive kids in the world and he couldn't deal with it. So why are they going to go and put him into the, what can I call it, going up? I'm going to say, keep it simple, the Lion's Den of Old Trafford. Could he honestly really... It's just, so who's going to come in? So I look at it and I think, so who are they going to bring in? Everyone's going to go, we can see that. So the best way around it, and I don't think it's not feasible, is just to get rid and bring in players. And they might have to start with a smaller squad financially. They might have to what maybe where they should be. But give a manager a chance to get, give the manager, or if you're going to bring someone else, give a manager the chance to do what he wants to do. Not allow Ten Hag, if he stays, or another person, if he come in, to have to go through the same stuff again. What's going on? Because it's like taking a pencil to a blunt sharpener. It's just a waste of time again. It's going to go on and on and on. And that's the last thing I think any Manchester United fan wants to see. Everyone goes, thank God Ten Hag's gone. Yeah. But then you go straight away, you get near to the finish line of it, and you look, but they're the same players. And they haven't crossed the finish line since 2013, some of them. So how the hell are they going to go and do it now?
No, I agree completely with everything you've said there. Mike says pragmatism versus wedded to philosophy. Ancelotti is a perfect modern coach. Sets the teams up for the match ahead. He's viewing how can I win the next game. I don't think United could do that at the moment, though. I think we'd see through that. But I want to come back to Rory's coming into you, Dave, to talk about the same thing. He says, I feel the problem a lot on the physical state of the squad, modern football that wins things has legs, and we have a squad that doesn't have legs in it. So take the injury crisis out of it. It's good. I mean, we brought in Casemiro and we brought in Eriksen at the start of last season. And at the start of last season, for 8 months at least, they were very smart signs. They were exactly what the team needed. They were exactly what the squad needed. We were crying out for those kind of players. What we actually needed, though, if you're buying players like that, you need to be succession building. And we didn't do that. And we didn't hand Ten Hag tools for that. I mean, Manu's been the only midfielder. So I know Mount has, but even if he was in the squad, he's still a Bruno replacement, which I'm the manager. But what I'm saying is, like, the succession building hasn't been there. Those players now look past it with that benefit of 2 years' experience, and probably they are. It shows the disparity in the squad, and the even for United, it might be a normal footballing problem, like across the globe of football, really. It's exacerbated United, it's highlighted, if we don't have the resources to write off players and bring them in the same capability as Manchester City. Now, it does come back to that comparison, but then you look at the likes of Liverpool and Arsenal who have been able to build. And I've been able to sort of transition City, Liverpool moving all their midfield on and in midfielders, and they're still competing at the top somewhat. They're not the same Liverpool as a couple of years ago. And I think that's where, all right, they were competing with City a couple of years ago, and now they're kind of like that lower echelon. United make bad decisions, did bad decisions there. The support for that transition wasn't ready. Like, I mean, I think Paul said it earlier in the season, that we should have invested in a younger from the start and then allowed that youth to sort of grow together. We did need that experience. Where do you stand on all that? I mean, I'm talking about the grey areas, the fine lines there for Ten Hag. And I don't like that we can talk about succession. I know Liam in the comments said that Flick would be a wise choice, but I don't want to talk about the potential success as well, and my post. I just want to go on the point of the fine margin of a Bournemouth goal that was disallowed in December, the fine margin of Coventry's goal yesterday, count, like say if that accounted a Coventry win 4-3, it's difficult to see Ten Hag starting next season. Really, it would have been difficult to see him ending the week as Manchester United manager. I think that's how brutal that result could have been for him. He's saved by the offside decision. I don't think he'd even be saved by a cup final victory. And I'm not, you can say where the blame does or doesn't lie, but it is difficult to see how Ten Hag continues as manager, isn't it?
I'm sorry, I was listening. He's breaking up.
Sure you weren't. Do you expect Ten Hag to be able to continue next season?
I mean, I think Paul said it earlier as well. The only thing that's keeping him in a job, I think, right now was the lack of availability out there of who they bring in. We all know, and we've heard a lot of the rumours about Gareth Southgate and how he's being pushed forward. But he shouldn't really survive, is my take on it. I think his time is up. But I am a little bit... I just don't know who they're going to bring in. And the way I see it is that if we don't have an out-and-out option of bringing in someone, we shouldn't get rid of them. I just don't think we should keep going through this cycle every 2 years. For me, and Wayne knows my love for this man, Carlo Ancelotti solves a lot of our problems. A lot of our problems. We should move heaven and earth to get him. If he wins the league with Real this year and he wins the Champions League, I think that's an opportunity for him to try something new. Ancelotti's the only man for me. I don't think he's driven by the money in the game. He's just driven by success. But if we can't get the right man, we shouldn't just be changing it just because that it's proven that doesn't work. I think if there was a lot of other names out there, he's gone, dead man walking. But I have that sneaky suspicion that's the reason why he will survive the summer. I do believe that. But that doesn't mean that I think he should, because I just feel that he's tried everything. It seems to be gradually getting worse, and there's only one inevitable result, and that is that the manager gets fired. But that said, we got Liverpool out there looking for a new manager. We got Barcelona out there looking for a new manager. And now Manchester United are three big clubs. And there isn't a lot out there. There isn't three good managers to take over those three clubs. You know, is there even one good manager out there that can take over any of those clubs? I don't believe so. I mean, Alonso was a big show. He's going to stay at Leverkusen. I mean, for me, I think the jury's still out on him. We bought players on the back of one good season and they turned to shit. You know, managers are no different, you know. To answer your question, I think he will survive, but it won't be down to the fact that we think he can do the job. It'll be down to the fact that who are we going to bring in? And if we bring in somebody that just, let's be honest, there isn't a lot out there. We're doing this again in 18 months' time. And we need some kind of stability somewhere within the club. I know you and I have talked about that in the past, Wayne. We need stability somewhere. Why can't it be the manager?
Theoretically, I agree with you. I just think that sometimes there comes a point, a fork in the road, where you look at it and you think, do you have any confidence in this going anywhere? And there are some results. Like, no, ordinarily, you don't survive 7-0 at Liverpool, but the sort of capitulations of the previous seasons and the fact that we just won a cup was like all the credit in the bank that he had, and like this now, he's so lucky with the Bournemouth and the Coventry disallowed goals, because I just think can't be how that would have. I think, and by the way, I know that there's comments in the comments about my internet. I'm sorry if that's caused a disruption show and that. Mocking Dave early if you're not listening, but apparently it's me, so I It's not him, it's me. Just a quick one before we go on. Sheffield United and Burnley. United are going nowhere in the league. These are two struggling teams. We've talked about bringing in players like Paul. This is a kind of perfect situation for him to play Armas from the start and to play a couple of these other kids in the squad, isn't it? He's got to make drastic changes for the game to sort of lift the squad again.
Sorry, there was just someone at the front door there. I think he has to make changes. He's got to. He's got to. Excuse me. You know, he's got to freshen it up. Just try different things, and that will be accepted. The majority of the supporters will accept that because I think they're fed up of seeing these same players coming out, and you know what's going to happen next. They want to see something different. They need to see something different. They need to see a bit of zest, enthusiasm, honesty, to be perfectly honest. It is needed now. I don't know how it's going to turn out that between now and that final. I think we'll be able to gauge it even better about what's going to happen at the start. Well, sorry, after that cup final. Could it be another Dutchman fired after a cup final? You know, that's you know, we don't know really how it's going to turn out, but there has to be different faces. This is, what worries me is all these injuries. It does, and I'm being, I don't know how to pull it across, but I'm sceptical about these injuries. I really, really am sceptical. And maybe I'm thinking about myself and what I was like, but for me, I couldn't, if I thought I was all right and I thought myself, I'm not going to let my mates down, I'd play in every game. But I've got to understand it and realise it, as I keep getting told, football's changed now. The personnel's changed. Their mentality has changed now about games of football. You know, the players who are playing now and the one where are they in love with the game as much as players during my time and maybe just after my time, but definitely players before me, football was the first love. It is what was going to happen, what they were going to do. And then the money side of it was secondary. I don't know if it's there anymore, to be perfectly honest, Wayne. I might have gone a bit deep on that. But I question how a manager, we've got people now, I keep seeing, they talk about injuries and they're going, oh, sack the medical team. Well, the medical team can only work off the fact of what the player's telling them. And they've got to gauge it off of that and then see if they can find something. Unless that player's got a pot on his leg or his arm, they don't know. But if you can't see something like a back injury and they're telling you've got a bad back, you've got to believe them that they've got a bad back. Marcus Rashford yesterday comes off injured. He's limping. He's having a Saka moment. If you watch that, you see the challenge. It was the cleanest challenge you'll ever see in your life. No contact. No, you get more contact in the Tesco's on a Friday night. And he goes down and he stays on the floor. And I'm there and I'm shaking my head. I cannot believe he has done that. And they've gone on the counter. Very similar to what happened at the Etihad. Very similar. And then all of a sudden, and he's injured. And I think to myself, you're going to go off that pitch. And you know that anyone who's watched that game on TV or anyone who's watched it in the stands on a TV monitor, they know that you have not been touched. And you're going to limp around now. Thick skin, no shame. And that's what managers have to deal with.
No, I mean, that's the point. What Paul was saying there, disconnect with the support and, you know, like, tired of seeing the same old stuff. You expect that he's bringing changes. I mean, he's, by and large, tried to stay with an experienced squad, hasn't he? He's tried to fill all the holes with experienced players. Now, you look at these next two games and think, I'm not saying he's got an opportunity to mix it up. What I mean is there's nothing in the league to play for. He probably stands to lose more than he gains if he keeps playing the same players. He's got to change it up for his own good.
Yeah, it's not working. I mean, it's not. I mean, you know, Ahmad came on Sunday and was probably one of our best players on Sunday. And he's come on in recent games and he's been one of our better players. There's energy about him. If Marcus Rashford is fit for this week's games, he should be on the bench. I think Ahmad should be playing. He gives us a little bit extra. He was the only one that seemed interested when he came on. Now was an opportunity to start bringing in a few of these players, because, and not just because we're coming to the end of the season, it's because what he's been doing isn't working. And like you said, we tried it with all the experienced players. We just collapse every time. We should definitely start blooding these players now. And these are, you know, semi-important games. You know, we're not going for the league title. We're not going for the Champions League. That's long gone. But we should definitely be bringing them in, not just throwing them in the last game of the season to do a lap of honour around the pitch. A lap around the pitch after the game. You should definitely be blooding them. And Ahmad should be starting on both, you know, on Wednesday and on Saturday. He deserves a place in that team. There's certain players that don't, but we're so razor thin at the moment that he has to stick with certain players. But you are right; it's not been working. It really hasn't with the experienced players. So start bringing in the young guys. Now you have an opportunity with, you know, what, 5 or 6 games left to go at the end of the season to start seeing what these guys are about. I mean, Paul said it earlier on in the podcast. You know, put them in there and show me what you can do. Throw them in there. That's what Ten Hag did at Ajax, you know, with a lot of the young boys. Just put them in, see what they can do. For me, I think Ahmad is the one that is the most obvious choice to start, because he was the only one that you know, did anything when he came on. And his performance was far better than any performance of anyone else that played 120 minutes. So,
yeah. Buck says, I want Buck, I don't want to slip into a knife. And I get that. I do get that. But I do feel like there's also an overarching theme with this. Like, I don't really care about the position now. I think the point of it is, I mean, United should be challenging for the title. Obviously, we were miles off that. But the fourth thing, yeah, you only get there to qualify for the next step and everything like that. But we're nowhere near that as well. And being in the Champions League, by the way, we showed how far away we were in the Champions League squad. So we need to get everything in order first. We need to actually look like a proper team and squad. So I don't think that the league position is that important. But I think, like, when you come off a game like we did yesterday, Coventry outplayed us for large portions of that game. They'll feel desperately unlucky for another result. It's one of the most pitiful performances and results in modern Manchester United history. And to follow that, it's going to be very, very difficult for a lot of these players. I mean, I've talked so many times since Christmas about this has got to be the final lesson. This has to be the final lesson. Yesterday's was such a public one that you know that it's not the peasant, but they will do the same things. They won't turn the corner. That's for the squad. It's for as many players as you care to mention, aside from the one or two who, like, you know, like Garnacho, maybe already be swallowed by it, but players like Mayo, who have still got enough credit, that you say, all right, they're creating positive change with that. So wherever we've seen in the past, and you look at the reasons for not bringing in players, young players, into this environment, now it's almost imperative that they are, in order to sort of lift the entire club. Regardless of how good they are, because the point is, if you can be outplayed by Coventry in an FA Cup semi-final and you're 3-0 up, and you can almost lose it with 20 minutes to go, nobody deserves a place in the team. Everybody should be at risk. And I'm thinking next game, entire future, everything at the club now is at stake, and you need to freshen up that, because the connection is with the younger players. Everyone's just been given a chance, like the likes of Armas. All right, he may fail, but he can't fail in a way that was worse than yesterday. Really can't be as bad as it was yesterday. So we need to be able to see those players given a chance, because you can't keep giving reward to failure. Otherwise, we'll keep giving failure. Anyway, that's it for this week. We'll be back next week, hopefully, to talk about, maybe not, it might be the week after, actually, to talk about the results over the next week or two. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. Have a great week, guys, and hopefully it's better than what your Sunday was. Well, if your Sunday was as negative as what I'm taking it, I hope your week's better. If your Sunday was as great as Dave's was, and full of positivity and everything like that, and optimism, then have as great a week as Dave's Sunday was. And we'll be back. Thanks for listening, and thanks for watching.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.